This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
As promised, we always bring you interesting conversations. But before we do that, we do the week's diary in terms of what is it that is happening in this beautiful country called South Africa and what we expect to probably occupy us during the week. As some of you might know or might have seen today, Julius Malema, the leader of the Economic Freedom Fighters, is actually appearing before the East London Magistrate Court. And of course, that is in connection with that case where he was allegedly seen in public discharging a firearm, which of course, as you may recall, some said it was a toy after that incident took place. And of course, the EFF was at East London celebrating or having a public event. I'm not so quite sure exactly what that event was about. And of course, another story that is, of course, going to continue to keep us busy until the Commission of inquiry into state capture concludes are the people who appear before that at 10 o'clock, just about now. We are expecting that Matsila Koko will make his way back to the commission in his capacity as former Eskom acting group chief executive officer. And of course, there he will be continuing to give evidence that is Eskom related in terms of all matters concerning state capture and, of course, allegations of his own role or lack thereof insofar as acting out on certain issues and probably giving permission for some contracts to be issued and some monies and prepayments. I mean, it's all we've been hearing about this story at Eskom, and it's just an ongoing episode, a soap opera. And of course, the matters at Eskom are not any better, even though the likes of Matsila Koko aren't there. As we talk now, we don't know when the next wave of load shedding might just hit us. But you know what? We've got to soldier on for as long as we remain with some level of electricity and keeping us going. Talking about keeping us going, some say there was chaos at the ANC's National Executive Committee meeting. And of course, that meeting is adjourned. It has not concluded, and we expect that it will conclude at some point today. I'm not so sure, because people have to get on with their business. As I'm looking, there is Minister Begicele issuing a report on policing. So I'm not sure at what point are the members. I mean, President Ramaphosa is expected to go to the Eastern Cape to visit one of the vaccination facilities. So I really don't know at what point it is going to conclude. But this is a story that is going to keep us occupied as much as this week is concerned. Of course, some people might say, are we doing an overkill on the ANC? Yeah, I do at times feel that we are. And of course, for good reason, they are the governing party. So if they can't keep their house in order, it has serious implications for how they can keep the state in order, as some of our callers said during that open line earlier today. But of course, if the ANC as an organization crumbles, what are the implications for the future of South Africa's political landscape? I'm joined by our political editor here on Power 98.7, Hajra. Good morning.
Good morning. It was really nice to have a good night's sleep.
Did you sleep? I mean, some people were like on night duty watch. At what point did you go to bed after realizing that this meeting is not going to conclude today?
I've covered the ANC for a long time. I comfortably went to bed at around 9 p.m., knowing that when I woke up at about 5 a.m. this morning, I would have all the information that I needed to come to the office and
juicy,
report to you.
Juicy, juicy. Hajra, what do you have for us today? What have you heard? I mean, what do we understand about this meeting? So, quite a fest of its kind, really, to end so abruptly.
So the first thing I need to tell you is that the NEC will resume at 5 p.m. tonight.
Okay.
Begicele is delivering a report on the SAPS this morning. Although the NEC had quite a late night, finished in the early hours of this morning. By 2 a.m. this morning, they were still sitting, and they've decided that they will continue tonight and quite possibly tomorrow until they resolve the issue of the step-aside rule. Now, ANC TG Paul Mashatile put together guidelines, and in those guidelines, it states that if you are charged and are appearing before a court of law, and for example, charges of fraud and corruption, you have 7 days to step aside. If you do not step aside, you should be suspended. The meeting at that point, we are told last night, descended into chaos with multiple interruptions, people screaming at each other, and they were not able to conclude. Conclusion in this matter is important. It is important because there cannot be a different interpretation of the rule and the decision of the NEC, because it could be challenged in court if, say, a Secretary General, Ace Magashule, is suspended. But what was most interesting about this weekend's meeting is Thabo Mbeki stood and Thabo Mbeki spoke. As a former ANC president, he explained the detail of the ANC from 1910 and spoke about how secretary generals have behaved. Mbeki made the case that there is a serious deficit with the likes of Magashule, and that the ANC needed to act. And he was not just talking about the fraud and corruption charges, but he was talking about how the organization is run. It seems as though Thabo Mbeki is worried that this may be the start of the end and that the ANC may die if it does not self-correct at this juncture.
Hajra, of course, I mean, that was quite interesting. In fact, I saw some clips. Some people actually took videos of that input by former President Thabo Mbeki. How do you respond to people who say, well, Mbeki has never had confidence in Ace Magashule anyway? That's why his leadership throughout the ages overlooked him while he was chairperson of the ANC in the Free State Province, just never appointed him to become premier. The only time he became premier was under the Jacob Zuma leadership.
Well, like Mandela, Mbeki had to answer Mandela's call on the issue of HIV. When a former president of the ANC speaks, you have got to listen. And yes, he's never had confidence in Magashule, but what Mbeki acknowledges is that the ANC could die. It will struggle to survive. It is now reaching that point of 30 years of liberation as a country. Now, the ANC generally moves quite slowly. It is like an elephant. But when it stomps, you feel that impact. Mm. And it seems on the issue of the step-aside rule, the ANC is ready to take a decision. What we require this evening is firm leadership from the president of the ANC, Cyril Ramaphosa, whether we agree or disagree. We disagreed with Jacob Zuma on state capture. Mm. People may have disagreed with Mandela on the issue of the Springbok being the emblem for the national rugby team. Mm. But they showed firm leadership. And that is what we require of Ramaphosa as the ANC plans to sit again.
Of course, Hajra, one of the issues with the NEC is that they are very reluctant to vote on issues. So they have this consensus-based type of deliberation and coming to conclusions on the meetings. Do you see this matter being driven to a vote?
So the ANC, NEC doesn't vote. It didn't even vote on the Mbeki recall or the Zuma recall issue. What happens is everyone gets to have their say. The chairperson, who is usually Gwede Mantashe, the person chairing the sentence, summarizes. People are then allowed to object if they disagree with the summary. And then the president of the ANC closes with the decision. So if Gwede chairs properly and Ramaphosa is strong enough to say this is the decision, Ace Magashule could be forced to step aside as Secretary General this week.
Could this be the first meeting that is unending in the ANC and we see it probably carry on towards the next weekend?
Anything is possible.
Hajra, of course, Ace Magashule stepping aside or stepping down is but one thing. He is an elected official, elected by conference. He is part of the top six. What implications does this have for the ANC if indeed successfully he's asked to step aside? We saw exactly what happened when Zweli Mvavi was sort of removed from his post as Secretary General of the COSATU Union. And I mean, the spillover effects of it were quite dire for the union.
Magashule is of the opinion that only conference can remove him. This is a big test for the ANC in terms of its traditions, because the NEC is the party's highest decision-making body between national conferences. It would also have huge implications for those that want Magashule to be ANC president, given that the ANC is headed to an NGC, a midterm review. him being suspended would mean that he is no longer in power. The issue of RET is also a big issue in the ANC. The ANC says a campaign against the ANC is being run out of Luthuli House via Esma Kgashule. And I think this has also major implications for that RET battle.
Is this a campaign, I mean, against the ANC, or this is just, I mean, how much ANC factions have graduated themselves and crystallized over time, which is what have been warned against, I mean, for years and decades now. It's just that probably now they've reached their zenith.
I have read all the ANC's policy documents and policy resolutions. There's nothing called RET. It's called Radical Socio-Economic Transformation. RET doesn't exist in terms of policy resolutions.
No, of course. I mean, Hajra, that's one thing. I'm just saying within the ANC itself, I mean, there's this tendency. Some people have been saying, well, I mean, these people must just go and form themselves. Of course, the RET forces have a logo, a different logo from the ANC logo. So they are quite an organized bunch. That's why I was quite surprised when Carl Niehaus was pushing back that there's nothing such as RET forces. He was lying, as usual. Carl Niehaus always lies anyway. But, I mean, insofar as factionalism, I don't see this RET forces or grouping being the ones that get to leave the ANC. It seems as if they will remain inside, and as long as they are not rooted out, they will continue to operate from within.
They are inside. They are operating outside, out of Luthuli House, and they seem to have the blessing of the ANC Secretary General. So as much as the battle is about the step-aside rule and how the ANC deals with its leaders who are facing charges of fraud and corruption, this is also about dealing with those campaigning against the ANC from inside Luthuli House.
Of course, Hajra, I've always been curious, what does it tell us about the ANC that they've chosen to place their focus on the step-aside rule, which centers the work of the Integrity Commission, versus just using the old known disciplinary processes, which are quite well articulated in the constitution of the ANC?
And this is where it will get interesting in this NEC, because if Mageshule refuses to step aside and refuses to be suspended, if the resolution is passed at this NEC, then it would be the NEC that would have to send a complaint to the disciplinary committee of the ANC and charge Mageshule formally, which could see his expulsion, which could result in an ANC split. The thing about politics and the thing about struggle is it's not an event, it's a process, and the ANC is in a pretty big moment in terms of that process. The reality is an entire Secretary General, the likes of Oliver Tambo, the likes of Kgalema Motlanthe, is sitting in the dock on charges of fraud and corruption, is accused of state capture, which is a treasonable offense. And imagine Oliver Tambo, Walter Sisulu, being charged for treason.
Well, I mean, Hajra, one might say Gwede Mantashe was probably one of the worst secretary generals of the ANC. It's just that he was not at odds with the sitting president. And the only problem here with Esma Kgashule, in fact, is that he's at odds with the sitting president. I mean, if you remember the Gupta incident, Mantashe issued a statement at about 9 p.m., which was the first of its kind. But as usual, he mantashed on that statement and carried on in the service of the agenda of the then president.
And justice must be blind, which is why we wait for the Zondo Commission report, where Mantashe is also facing serious allegations of fraud and corruption.
Is the ANC tackling the issues that attack its integrity properly? Does the integrity of the ANC fall or stand only when you are before a judge in a court of law, or by merely having so many of its leaders charged or alleged in the State Capture Commission, in the police stations, or wherever these allegations have emerged? I mean, the likes of Zizi Kodwa themselves he seems to have been a kept politician at some point, whether by EOH or by SODI and so on. How do you, in the totality of guarding the integrity of the ANC, capture those and articulate them and ensure that there's also sanctioning for that type of allegations?
Well, let's not forget the ANC and how it swelled, how it won KwaZulu-Natal, for example. Under Jacob Zuma, under the likes of Senzo Mqunu, the numbers of the ANC swelled, and it has always been a party that has tried to be a broad church. But the ANC has got to decide what it is, what its identity is, what it stands for. And the Integrity Committee was a response to the social pleas that were happening in the country, the ANC trying to respond to it. But politics is not an event, it is a process. We are at an important juncture within that process. If Magashule is suspended or expelled from the party, if Suprema Maphelo's people in the Northwest are not on the ANC list for local government elections, we could see a split where the Zumaites go to their own political party and then the ANC is left with Ramaphosa to do with what he wants.
What happens when they remain within and fight to the battle for 2022 National Elective Conference?
Polokwane, Mangaung, Nazrek, and what we're currently seeing.
And I suppose you'll say that they'll make Polokwane look like a picnic, perhaps, coming to next year's elections.
Well, there's no doubt in my mind if Magashule remains the Secretary General of the ANC in office, Ramaphosa is going to have a tough time at NGC.
Hajra, thank you so much for joining us. Let us leave it there for this morning.
Power Talk on Power 98.7.
Okay, welcome back. Of course, we continue with this week's diary. One of the most important things that is coming up this week, of course, is Easter weekend. For the first time in South Africa last year, we saw churches being closed and shut and people not being able to go to places of worship, whatever their religious, at least in the Christian denomination, whatever church groupings they belong to, because of the restrictions that were put in place as an attempt to try and manage the spread and, you know, exacerbation of COVID-19. At that time, there was very little we knew about the novel virus, coronavirus, that we were dealing with. And of course, now, a year later, we are probably much wiser. But I'm going to be joined on the line by Rev Moss Ntla, who is the General Secretary for the Evangelical Alliance of South Africa. Rev Ntla, good morning and welcome to Power Talk.
Good morning, Lukona. I'm delighted to be with you.
Thank you so much for making the time. I mean, it seems as if as church leaders, you are optimistic on the engagements that you have been having with the president. Are we most likely to see the Easter celebrations and services going ahead in the various churches across our country?
Well, the court is in the president. The ball is in the president's court, Lukona. About that, we had a very good meeting a couple of weeks ago with the president, and the church leaders basically made a plea for a sympathetic assessment of where the churches are at, the role they play, and the possibilities that they have. And the plea, one of the loudest pleas that were brought before the president was that there ought to be an allowance for the protocols of COVID to be kept in the churches to the degree of 50% of the floor space in a church building. In other words, if you keep the COVID protocols within the 50% of the church space, that the ceiling should be raised. Up till now, it has been 100 people. And the churches were saying, where space allows, could that be raised, say, for example, to 50 or,
yes,
you know. And as we know, the churches are not the same. There are very large mega churches which would probably account for about 2% of the church community, and the majority of them would not have such floor spaces. So it's quite a tricky situation. We are looking to government to give us guidance on that.
I mean, we are on Monday, and of course, as we know, Easter services tend to begin on Thursday evening. I mean, where does this put you in terms of your planning, given that there seems to have been no directive? Because what you are pleading for, especially around the 50% of floor space, it would necessitate an amendment to the latest lockdown regulations.
That's correct. And as I said, it is a request made by church leaders. I don't think that there is a sense in which church leaders would defy whatever the outcome of the president assessment is. Remember that Easter is a very important moment in the life of the church. But yeah, central to that is the idea that Easter celebrates the death of and the resurrection of Jesus Christ,
yes,
who by his own testimony said that he was doing that to protect the flock. And so our view is that foremost in our minds should be, what is the best way to protect the flock of Christ? It is a sad moment when the church, when the state seems to be more concerned about the flock than the, that sometimes the church leaders appear to be.
Yeah.
And so we would hope that the fundamental question in our minds would be, what is the safest way to guarantee the survival of the people in our care as church leaders?
Of course, I mean, talking about the survival of people in your care as church leaders, no doubt there has been not just only a loss of life, but some people have been talking about, you know, the destruction of spiritual life, particularly in those areas where people have not been able to be on the virtual platforms to receive messages and all of that. How have you tried to reach out, especially around now when we are on lower levels, at level one of the restrictions? How have you tried to reach out in those communities that were unable to plug into the virtual spaces for their spiritual enrichment and nourishment?
In all of Kuala, there is sufficient research about what is the best way to guarantee the spiritual nature of believers.
Mm.
And the Sunday event, or the Easter type of event,
yes,
where you have big crowds coming together, that is hardly as effective as we often think it is in terms of caring for the spiritual needs of people. But what happens more that is more effective is actually what small groups that meet throughout the week,
like cell groups, classes, and
that,
so on.
That is correct. The Sunday event isn't actually nearly as important as it's often, presumed to be. And so I think that the whole pandemic has forced many of us to rethink what is the best way to drive spiritual formation, to help people form the characters, as the Christian character that would survive a worse onslaught than we're currently having. I think if we're dependent only on big events on the weekend, we wouldn't survive the worse things than we have now.
Reverend, so, it seems as if you are saying COVID-19 has forced the church back to its roots and, in terms of that rethinking space. But, I mean, that's all we have time for today. But thank you so much for joining us and updating us on where your deliberations with the government are currently.
Thank you, Lucas.
Thank you very much. That's the General Secretary at the Evangelical Alliance of South Africa, Rev Moss Ntla. It is time for Power News Update.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.